It was the first typewriter to have, the first machine to have the QWERTY keyboard. And as you know, QWERTYUIOP, that line, has all the letters for the word typewriter in it.
I don't think I knew that.
See?
So with eight fingers, you can type the word typewriter.
That is correct. He wanted to...
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of Tactful Tuesdays. I'm your host, Eric Vessels. Today we have the distinct honor of hosting a true luminary in the world of print, Frank Romano. With a career spanning over six decades, Frank has been a pivotal figure in the printing industry, starting right out of high school at the Mergenthaler Linotype Company in Brooklyn, New York, which he talks about a lot. He founded the publication Type World. He's been the editor for many editions at the indispensable industry tool Pocket Pal, Handy Book of Graphic Arts Production. Over the years, Frank has reached thousands of people through his consulting, writing, speeches, videos. His students will remember his years as a professor at RIT and research professor at Cal Poly. He's the author of more than 60 books on the topic related to printing and design. 79, nearly 80 books. Old information that I researched with ChatGPT, including currently serving as the president of the Museum of Printing in Haverhill, Mass, where he is sitting. Frank has generously donated the building, his voluminous library, to the museum, spends nearly every day there. You've got a cot there, right? Don't you have a bed? He sleeps at the museum, which is awesome. In 2025, Frank celebrated his 80th birthday, marking what the Museum of Printing has called the Year of Frank. Honoring his invaluable contributions to preserving the history of the printing museum. I've known Frank for a really long time. At what they think he was one of the first people that said, it's like a good idea. I'll help you out, kid. And it clearly helped us out. So Frank, it's an absolute pleasure to have you with us today. And I will say, you just got the longest introduction for Tactful Tuesdays in the history of the podcast.
I'm probably the oldest person you've had on.
Correct. I think that's true. So I would ask you what's new, but I think I probably have to ask you what's old at the museum.
We just got in a replica of a 1700s wooden English common press, the kind of press that Ben Franklin used. We're going to print the Declaration of Independence because, as you know, next year is the 250th anniversary of the Declaration.
It absolutely is. So you'll print some, wow. So those are the kinds that's got like the wooden plate and a screw on top thing? Is that how that works?
It's not so much a screw. That was more of a Gutenberg's design. The common press had a toggle that converted lateral movement into vertical pressure. And it was very common. The first press that came to America was the Elliott press. And it printed the Elliott Indian Bible here in Boston. That press still exists, by the way. It's up in a museum in Vermont.
So how'd you get your hands on that thing?
A friend of ours had it down in Boston at Old North Church, and he lost his lease.
So it needed a home.
It needed a home, and it's just in time. I'm writing a little book called Printing Created America.
That is outstanding. So I'm assuming that we'll see kind of how you did it with the Declaration of Independence, and what you'll be making some replicas we could get our hands on maybe that would be fun?
Absolutely. We're probably going to do three versions of it. The Dunlop version, which was the first one, then the one that Marianne, I forget her last name, did. And then we have a German version we did. Because what happened was they did one version and they sent it to all the states, and then the states did their own setting of it again and printed it.
So how many originals are in circulation? Have any clue?
Less than 50.
Wow.
One last year went for, God, phenomenal number of millions of dollars.
Less than 50. And that includes like what they printed in DC and at the states. That's all included, less than 50 of
that's
original.
Correct. That still exists. That's the problem.
Wow.
People didn't take care of them. Although every few years they seem to discover another one, you know, behind a painting or something like that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Right. You know, it's got me looking at paintings in thrift stores all the time. I wonder what if there's some $1 million thing behind the thing, but I'm never going to.
Absolutely.
I also quit playing the lottery because I'm never going to get that lucky. I don't think.
So, well, Frank, yeah. So we're planning a lot of stuff for the bicentennial of the Declaration.
Outstanding. What? I mean, that's so great. I look forward to seeing, you know, hopefully we'll get to see some videos, and I would love to get my hands on on one of those replicas for sure. I have a mini collection of printed stuff, nowhere near like your collection, but the cool stuff I try to keep. One of the things I wanted to talk to you about is you have a really unique way of what I would say weaving a thread through history to inform what we're doing in print today. And the question I wanted to pose to you, and let's explore it for a little bit. What are the common themes, do you think, that we've seen in printing from a historical standpoint, going all the way up through the digital age and kind of where we're at now with technology? Are there some common themes that you've seen as a historian of the craft that sort of pop out to you and can inform what we're doing today?
Yeah, absolutely. Replacing people with machines.
Okay, yeah.
If you look throughout history, again, remember, in the old days, when you set type, you had to pick the letters one at a time out of a type case. A newspaper had hundreds of people doing that. And so there were like tremendous rewards all through the 1800s for anyone who could invent a machine that could do that. And then in 1886, you get the Linotype machine. The Linotype now dominates, but the problem is it's run by the union. And the newspapers had this love-hate relationship with the union. So the attempt was to replace operators. So they came up with paper tape. But then the union said, oh, no, you can use paper tape, but you have to have a monitor watching the machine. And so that didn't help. So then computers came in, and then photo typesetting came in. And then we get into the printing area. A printing press has required a lot of make-ready. And I remember when we went to a Drupa show, when Nan Roland introduced the first press that loaded plates automatically. That was revolutionary. And now we have some tremendous automation on the press, and then digital printing comes in. So little by little, we're eliminating people throughout the entire process of printing, which is probably a good thing. As the volume of printing goes down, there's not enough industry out there to support everybody at this stage of the game. So I think we'll even see more automation with artificial intelligence coming through.
Yeah, for sure. And I was going to, we'll talk a little bit about that. But one of the things that I always thought growing up as a kid, you know, you would hear like uppercase and lowercase. I always thought it was just the bigger letters like were up higher and the lowercase were down lower. But it's actually, that came from actual cases of type that had to be set.
Absolutely.
Which I think is super fascinating. So the large capital letters were in the uppercases and the lowercase letters were in the lowercases. I think that's.
Yep.
I've always found that fascinating when I learned that. When I learned that, it was just like, well, of course, but yet I didn't think of it.
And as you know, you had to pick the letters out and set them upside down and backwards. So you had to watch your P's and Q's.
There you go. That would be, it's such an interesting thing to see that progression. And that's why I love listening to you talk and visiting you at the museum, because you've got actual physical representations of like how the technology has changed and how we've gotten better and better. What are your thoughts? I did want to talk a little bit about AI, because you talk about replacing. I think, I don't know, people always freak out when we have technology that could potentially replace a job or whatever. What are your thoughts on, first of all, machines kind of automating some of the processes? Like, we're still going to need people to operate machines, do the creative work. That can't be replaced by machines. But the same with AI, right? Like AI to me just feels like a tool that makes it easier to do things that you were doing that was laborious. Like for instance, setting type physically versus digital typesetting today. How do you see AI impacting the printing industry going forward?
Well, if you look at the printing industry, what you'll discover is there are very few people working in the printing industry. We replace them with automation in most cases. By the way, many schools no longer teach printing. There's very few teaching printing at this stage of the game because there's not a big market for workers in the printing industry. However, I do 34 school groups a year, and they're all graphic design classes. So what's happened is we've shifted over from the printing industry employment to really the design industry employment. So the question now is, you know, we graduate about 50,000 students every year from baccalaureate programs, two-year and four-year college programs, if you will. I have no idea where they find a job. But now I look at the numbers, and it's skyrocketing in terms of the number of kids that want to be graphic designers. I don't know if they realize it or not, but I can probably use AI more with graphic design than I can with printing. I mean, really, when you get right down to it, it's selecting type, and art objects and organizing them into some kind of a layout. AI can do that. And over time, I think that all these graphic design kids who think there are great jobs out there are going to discover that a computer program can do what they do.
Yeah, that's true. I think what it occurs to me as you were talking is, like, instead of let's study printing, now as it shifts to graphic design, it's let's study creative arts, and the outputs are many, right? So, because you may design something for digital use for a screen, or you may design something for printed output, right? So it's now a channel and an option. And I think that's what we need to focus on in the printing industry, is like not just taking it for granted, but finding the right use cases for print, right? And I think we're discovering that. And the interesting thing that I'm looking at a lot of the numbers stuff that we're studying, like direct mail, is sort of coming back because people are tiring of digital marketing and they want to touch and feel something again. And especially in the digital embellishment world, we're talking all the time. We're in the middle of a boot camp that we're doing. We do an 8-week digital embellishment boot camp. And one of the sessions, the hour-long sessions, was Daniel Dijon talking about the power of touch and haptics and how that emotes in a different way. It creates a different connection than a computer screen. So I think there's always going to be that kind of connection. I think it's just going to change over time. And like you said, we may be studying the creative arts, and print is just one of the outputs, but it's going to continue to be an output. It's fascinating. I mean, it's change is inevitable, as you know. At your age, you've seen a lot of it.
I've seen all of it. We're hosting a meeting here in late March, I think.
That's in April. I wanted to talk about that a little bit. So a workshop at the museum. It's what's new in print embellishment.
Actually, it's 2 days. 1 day for printers and 1 day for designers.
Yeah, April 22nd, we have Pine. Printing Industries of New England, AIGA Boston on Wednesday, April 23rd. Tactiful is one of the, I don't know if you would call them sponsors, but one of the companies that's involved. HPG Print also involved in this. Duplo, Fuse Effects, LCI Papers, Infinite Foils. Definitely want to watch that. I'm hoping to be there with Kevin and we can create some content around it. But I think a workshop at the museum, what's new in print embellishment. Everybody in that area, I hope, will come to Haverhill at the Museum of Printing and join us April 22nd and April 3rd, two separate days. So look, I think we're working on some actual embellished invitations and some cool digital promotion for it. So between now and April, people are gonna definitely hear about it. But I love watching you. I think one of the most exciting things for the museum for me is seeing events happen there, whether it be school kids coming to learn, whether it be networking meetings, whether it be educational, talking about digital embellishment. I love, love, love that you're doing that. Couple of questions to end up with, and these are kind of a little bit fun. I want to know, you've traveled pretty extensively, pretty famous for not wanting to fly, although you have. So I want to ask you, what is your favorite place that you've ever visited?
Oh, wow. That's a great question. Again, as you know, I've taken 3 world cruises.
You have.
And
the famous Drupal world cruises, the cute.
We kept track of them on whatthey think.com, as I recall.
We did. We were Where's Frank? Yeah, around the world.
Wow. Gosh, there are so many great places out there. I would have to say that of all the places, London has the most things of interest to me.
Okay.
In terms of libraries, museums, history. Every time you turn a corner, there's a building that has some link to history. So
absolutely. Yeah.
I could spend days and days in London.
Awesome. And well, you know what? That's one place that I haven't gone to, believe it or not, in all of my travels. But that's one thing I think that strikes me too, is every time I go to Europe, just we don't have the age of things here. We're such a relatively newer country, except on where you're at. On the East Coast, there's in Boston area, that's obviously a lot of old stuff. But you go to like Prague and there's like a bridge that was built in 560 or something.
I know.
It's insane. Last but not least, and this is an important one too, I'm going to ask you to pick another favorite. There are so many things at the museum, and every time I've been there, I think 3 times, and I'm sure that I've not seen everything. I tend to look at the same stuff over and over again because I dig it, you know. I have to branch out. What is your favorite piece that you have in the museum, and tell us about?
the Apple Lisa.
Okay.
Remember,
Steve. Let's just, for everybody who may not be familiar, and if you're not, please go to Mass at some point and visit Frank at the museum. You will absolutely enjoy it. If you're anywhere near there, you have to stop by. But not only does he have the old printing presses and all kinds of old, Ben Franklin type stuff, he also has a very, very extensive collection of electronics and digital stuff, computers, for desktop publishing. I couldn't think of that.
That's it.
Tell us about the Lisa and why. I'm a little bit surprised that it's not some kind of old printing press, Frank.
I'll get back to that in a second.
All right.
Steve Jobs, when Apple started, it was the Apple One and Apple Two.
The wooden thing, literally wood.
Yes. And then they started working on the Lisa, which was going to have a graphical user interface. Steve had gone to Xerox and he had seen what they were doing with graphical user interfaces. And that blew him away. The problem was the Lisa was overpriced, undercapable, didn't succeed. They threw them away in most cases. I have one of the few that are out there. The other thing I have that's my second favorite, and I got to tell you this, it just came in. I have the world's first typewriter, the Scholes Glidden 1873. First machine called a typewriter, invented by Christopher Latham Scholes, manufactured by the Remington Arms Company. I have the first one.
Whoa. How on earth did you get your hands on that?
Well, some gentleman came into the museum one day, and we were chatting. He was my age, and he had worked in St. Louis, and somehow he had acquired it and didn't know what to do with it. So we made a deal, and he drove it up here with his wife, and it's now on display. It was the first typewriter to have, the first machine to have the QWERTY keyboard. And as you know, QWERTYUIOP, that line, has all the letters for the word typewriter in it.
I don't think I knew that.
See?
So with eight fingers, you can type the word typewriter.
That is correct. He wanted them in order, but the problem is the bars kept sticking. And so his problem was to separate the characters enough, but he needed to find all the letters because to demonstrate the machine, he and his daughter would type out the word typewriter.
Wow. Was that, and is that the first time that word was used? Like, is that the genesis for the word typewriter? Was that device?
That's right. And he copyrighted it and owned it for a number of years.
Wow.
So
fascinating. Well, so this is a piece that next time I come in, I have to see because I'm sure I haven't if you just got it.
Absolutely.
So awesome. Frank, man, it's always a joy to talk to you. You have such a what I love about you is you always have this fresh perspective on the industry, even though your focus is on history, right? Like you're always... Like we can talk about AI, right? Because you pay a really close attention to the present because you're building the history, right? And I think that's just a wonderful perspective. And I've loved your videos on Friday. I think, I don't know how long ago we started the Fridays with Frank thing at What They Think, but it's such a joy to watch what you do at the museum and that you share the knowledge with everybody freely. And I just want to thank you for being on Tactful Tuesdays. I'm so glad to finally get you on the podcast, man.
Yeah, I appreciate it, by the way, very much. And thank you, by the way, for what you did building whatthethink.com, by the way.
You're welcome. You were a big part of it. I mean, there were people that supported us in the early days and there were a lot of people that were kind of going, we don't need an email every day about what's going on in the industry. And lo and behold, yes, if they don't get it, they used to email or call us. Frank, such a pleasure. Thanks for being on. Take care. I hope to see you in April, and we will talk soon, my friend.
Okay. Take care, Eric.
See you.